This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. Russian forces are continuing their push for the Ukrainian city of Bakhmut, a prime target for Moscow in eastern Ukraine, AP correspondent Sarah Naffa reports.
Ukrainian units destroyed two key bridges just outside Bakhmut, including one linking it to the nearby town of Chasiv Yar, along the last remaining Ukrainian resupply route, according to UK military intelligence officials and other Western analysts. The Institute for the Study of War, a Washington-based think tank, assessed that Kiev's actions may point to a looming pullout from parts of the city. It said Ukrainian troops may conduct a limited and controlled withdrawal from particularly difficult sections of eastern Bakhmut, while seeking to inhibit Russian movement there and limit exit routes to the west. I'm Sarah Naffa.
A station master accused of causing Greece's deadliest train disaster has been charged with negligent homicide and jailed pending trial. At least 57 people were killed when a northbound passenger train and a southbound freight train collided late Tuesday in central Greece. The 59-year-old station master allegedly directed the two trains traveling in opposite directions onto the same track. U.S. President Joe Biden is using the searing memories of 1965's Bloody Sunday in Selma in the southern state of Alabama to recommit to securing voting rights. The president was among those commemorating Sunday's anniversary of the brutal attack by authorities on peaceful civil rights demonstrators as they marched along the city's Edmund Pettus Bridge.
The children of God started a journey, walking, not saying a word, beaten, tear gassed. On this bridge, blood was given to help redeem the soul of America.
This is VOA News. China on Sunday set a modest 5% target for its economic growth this year as it kicked off the annual session of its National People's Congress. Reuters correspondent Fiona Jones has more.
This year's NPC is poised to implement the biggest government shakeup in a decade. That's after gross domestic product grew by just 3% last year, one of the economy's weakest performances in decades. It has been squeezed by 3 years of COVID controls, a crisis in the vast property sector, and a crackdown on private enterprise. Premier Li warned that global inflation remains high, global economic and trade growth is losing steam, and that external efforts to suppress and contain China are escalating. Among the many challenges faced by Beijing is an increasingly fraught relationship with the United States, which is trying to block its access to cutting-edge technology.
Reuters correspondent Fiona Jones. Iranian schoolgirls have again been targeted in poisoning attacks, media reports said Sunday, in a wave of such incidents that has sparked fear among parents and calls for authorities to act. For more than 3 months, hundreds of female students have reported suffering symptoms such as shortness of breath, nausea, and vertigo after detecting unpleasant or unknown odors. The poisoning cases, which have led to some girls being hospitalized, have been at the center of national discussions, with a health official saying last week the suspected attacks were aimed at shutting down education for girls. The nearly 8-year-old U.S. deployment to Syria to combat Islamic State is still worth the risk, the top U.S. military officer said on Saturday, after a rare unannounced visit to a dusty base in the country's northeast to meet U.S. troops. Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman reports.
Army General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, arrived in the dusty, embattled region where the U.S. has a force of about 900 service members deployed to monitor and counter remaining Islamic State militants. This little-known American mission in Syria is meant to keep a lid on any potential resurgence of ISIS as the U.S. tries to grapple with threats from Russia and China. U.S. troops have operated in Syria without permission from Damascus since 2015. It is today a remnant of the global war against terrorism that saw massive U.S. invasions and occupations in Iraq and Afghanistan. While those two operations have since ended, top American commanders appear committed to maintaining a small cadre of forces in Syria for now.
Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman. For the first time, United Nations members have agreed on a unified treaty to protect biodiversity in the high seas, concluding 2 weeks of talks in New York. The high seas encompass nearly two-thirds of the ocean and half the planet's surface. Follow us on the VOA mobile app. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Today is Monday, March 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Ukraine's military faces increasing pressure from Russian forces in Bakhmut.
As fighting intensified Sunday in the outskirts of Bakhmut, reports emerged that the Ukrainian army was trying to help civilians flee.
China slams a decision by the U.S. to approve millions of dollars in arms sales to Taiwan.
Taiwanese F-16 fighter jets will receive hundreds of missiles and related equipment under a proposed $619 million arms sales that Congress was notified of by the Biden administration this week.
And Egypt sentences over a dozen people, including rights activists, to prison on terror-related charges. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. As Russian forces and Ukrainian forces intensify their fight for the eastern Ukrainian city of Bakhmut, residents there are finding it harder and harder to remain. VOA's Veronica Baderas-Inglesias reports on the challenges as Ukrainian diplomatic efforts to get international support continue.
As fighting intensified Sunday in the outskirts of Bakhmut, reports emerged that the Ukrainian army was trying to help civilians flee. Life had already been greatly disrupted by the advances of the Russian army and mercenary force known as the Wagner Group. Local resident Natalia Ishkova told the Associated Press.
There are problems with food. Humanitarian food is given to us only once a month. There is no electricity, no water, no gas.
The Ukrainian troops are committed to fiercely pushing back the Russians, said a commander who went by the name of Kurt.
They hope to get the city without big losses, but they have lost so many people.
On Saturday, a Russian Defense Ministry spokesman, Igor Konashenkov, said Moscow's forces had destroyed several Ukrainian infantry vehicles and killed soldiers in the Donetsk region.
During the ongoing active operations of the units of the southern group of troops, airstrikes and artillery fire, up to 490 Ukrainian servicemen were killed and wounded per day.
VOA was not able to independently verify this claim. The Russian Defense Ministry also released what it said were images of Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu inspecting a command post in the Ukraine's eastern Donetsk region, where Bakhmut is located. Also over the weekend, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky met with European Parliament President Roberta Metsola and outlined his goals.
The task is to prepare everything as actively as possible for our country's membership in the European Union, to increase the supply of weapons to Ukraine, and to strengthen sanctions against Russia.
Metsola called for the creation of a special tribunal to investigate war crimes.
We will meet with the United Nations personnel. We need to make sure that we have the mechanisms, first of all, to collect the evidence, but then to prosecute them.
The UN documented summary executions that may constitute war crimes in the Bucha area. Over the weekend, a memorial was held there for 8 Ukrainian men who attempted to block the Russian advances a year ago, but who, according to Ukrainian authorities, were captured and killed. Veronica Valderas-Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
China is slamming a decision by the Biden administration to approve a $619 million potential arms sales to Taiwan that includes hundreds of missiles for F-16 fighter jets. Tensions are high between Washington and Beijing amid Western fears that Beijing may supply weapons to help Russia win its war in Ukraine. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wadaskuwara has this report.
Taiwanese F-16 fighter jets will receive hundreds of missiles and related equipment under a proposed $619 million arms sales that Congress was notified of by the Biden administration this week. The move is a violation of Chinese sovereignty, said Foreign Ministry spokesperson Mao Ning.
The U.S. claims to respect territorial sovereignty,
but it has walked on the edge, pushed the envelope, and violated its commitment to the Taiwan issue, and even sold advanced weapons to China's Taiwan region.
Foreign military sales are usually state to state, but the administration says the proposal, likely to pass Congress with bipartisan support, is consistent with the Taiwan Relations Act. The law allows Washington to sell weapons to Taiwan to maintain a sufficient self-defense against China. Beijing considers the self-governing island a breakaway province. Taipei's representative in the U.S. says they appreciate U.S. commitment to strengthening Taiwan's self-defense. The trade lobby group U.S.-Taiwan Business Council says that the administration is trying to build munition stocks in case of a Chinese blockade of the island. The administration denies that the sale will put further strain on the U.S. defense industry, which is struggling to supply munitions to Ukraine as it defends itself against Russia's aggression. The proposed sale further inflames heightened tensions with Beijing. Amid Western fears that China is considering providing weapons to help Russia's war in Ukraine and the growing ties between Moscow and Beijing. Earlier this week, China rolled out the red carpet for Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko, a close Russian ally. A meeting between Chinese President Xi Jinping and Russian leader Vladimir Putin is also planned. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News at the White House.
Thank you, Patsy. And former President George W. Bush recently urged Washington lawmakers to reauthorize the president's emergency plan for AIDS relief, an initiative he launched two decades ago against one of the deadliest diseases at that time. Bush was joined by former President of Tanzania, Jakaya Kikwete, and others at the U.S. Institute of Peace. VOA senior correspondent Mariama Diallo has this report.
Tonight I propose the emergency plan for AIDS relief.
It was 20 years ago when former President George W. Bush made a plea before Congress at his State of the Union address.
I asked the Congress to commit $15 billion over the next 5 years, including nearly $10 billion in new money, to turn the tide against AIDS in the most afflicted nations of Africa and the Caribbean.
Fast forward to today. Bush, who came to Washington to mark his plan's 20-year anniversary, says the program to provide life-saving treatment to millions of people living with HIV and AIDS was a success. The president's emergency plan for AIDS relief, or PEPFAR, is due for reauthorization this year.
This program needs to be funded. And for the skeptics, all I ask is look at the results. And if the results don't impress you, then nothing will impress you.
The success of PEPFAR boils down to the numbers, says David Kramer, executive director of the Bush Institute.
Over 25 million lives have been saved as a result of President Bush's PEPFAR initiative. And it was a vision that he had to step in and help people who were in real need of help. He felt the United States was in a position to do so.
Since the legislation was signed into law in May 2003, PEPFAR has benefited from bipartisan support in Congress, even though its abstinence programs, a requirement later removed, had drawn criticism. Former President Donald Trump proposed to reduce PEPFAR's funds during his term, but was unsuccessful. Winnie Byanyima, executive director of the Joint United Nations Program on HIV/AIDS, or UNAIDS, recognizes PEPFAR's impact.
When he announced PEPFAR 20 years ago, our people were dying. Our countries were devastated. There was fear, there was pain, there was suffering. So we come here to honor President Bush, the American government, the American taxpayers, for $100 billion that has been put in this program.
She also says it was partnerships that formed between PEPFAR, the Global Fund, UNAIDS, civil societies, and governments that helped to turn the tide.
Thank you for your compassion.
Former President of Tanzania, Jakaya Kikwete, who joined Bush at the event, recalls getting tested publicly to encourage others who were afraid to do the same.
So the best thing is for my wife and I to lead by example. And we should not do it under the tent where nobody sees it. Of course, my veins were easy, but my wife had some problem. The pre-call several times before they could get there. I was very sorry for her. But we said that's the price of leadership.
With a target of ending AIDS by 2030, Stopping new infections is a must, especially given 2021 data, says Byanyima.
Sadly, we had 1.5 million new infections worldwide, most of these in sub-Saharan Africa. We had 650,000 people who died in 2021 of AIDS-related illnesses.
Not one of those new infections and deaths had to happen, she said. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis has apologized for any responsibility Greece's government bears for the deadliest train crash in the country's history. At least 57 people died when a passenger train and a freight train collided late Tuesday. This, as officials said, the search for survivors has ended. Anthi Karasava reports on the growing anger and frustration across the nation as protests come up with the end of a three-day national period of mourning.
Firefighters and volunteers say a final inspection of mangled passenger rail cars would be completed by the end of Friday, before fleets of cranes and heavy machinery moved to clear wreckage and restore the operation of Greece's railway network. The carriages were thrown off the tracks, crushed and engulfed in flames, when a high-speed passenger train packed with some 350 people, mainly university students, collided head-on with a freight train late Tuesday. Rescue crews say all forensic evidence had been gathered from the rail cars, but a final sweep of the wagons would be conducted before they were moved. A final batch of black bags with forensic evidence, mobile phones, rucksacks and personal belongings were delivered to police late Thursday to assist in ongoing investigations. But frustration and anger is growing among grieving relatives and Greeks altogether. A Greek government spokesman said the station master on duty near the site of Tuesday's train collision had admitted to being guilty of negligence. On Friday, railway workers walked off their jobs for a second day, complaining of a train network that remains outdated, underfunded, and dangerous because of lacking security systems that Greek taxpayers paid for decades ago, but have yet to see installed. In Athens and Larissa, near the site of the crash, students protested in the streets, accusing authorities of waging what they called a cover-up. They vowed in massive banners they hoisted during their protest to become, as they put it, the voice of the dead. The demonstrations took place as scores of parents and relatives remained gathered outside a hospital near the site of the crash, waiting for the results of DNA tests that could identify their loved ones. By Friday, only 24 of the remains collected by crews from the wreckage have been identified, bringing painful closure to relatives. For dozens more, the agony continues, especially for those whose relatives remain missing and unaccounted for. Dimitris Bournazis, who lost his father and 15-year-old brother, is among them. No one told us anything, he told television crews. I've called the railway company four times to get some sort of information about my relatives, and I've been placed on hold with a machine-operated system telling me how to enjoy Greece's safest travel. The government of Conservative Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis has vowed to set up a cross-party committee to investigate the causes of the crash, afford speedy justice, and to remedy long-standing flaws in the country's railway system. Critics say the action is late by 57 lost lives. Anthi Karasava for VOA News, Athens.
In other news, Egypt has sentenced 14 people, including rights activists, to prison terms ranging between 5 and 15 years on terrorism-related charges in a trial deplored by rights groups as unfair. Sunday's verdicts were the latest mass sentencing in Egypt. They were reported by the Egyptian Initiative for Personal Rights, one of the country's most prominent human rights. The suspects were arrested in 2018 as part of a wide-ranging crackdown by authorities on dissent. Two activist lawyers among the 14 were sentenced to 15 years in prison each on charges of joining and funding a terrorist group. This is a phrase the government uses for the Muslim Brotherhood. Egyptian authorities designated the Islamist group a terrorist organization in 2013. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. A report this week said Ethiopia wants to terminate a UN-backed investigation into abuses committed during the two-year war in Tigray. Reuters news agency said Ethiopia is lobbying governments to back resolution that would end the mandate of the commission conducting the investigation. Rights groups say stopping the probe on alleged war crimes would deny justice and undermine the credibility of the UN Human Rights Council. Maya Mistakir reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Human Rights Watch this week published a letter signed by 63 rights groups to the UN Human Rights Council expressing concern about Ethiopia's plans to introduce a motion to end the commission probing the war in Tigray region. Amnesty International, one of the groups to sign the letter, says terminating the mandate of the commission would have serious consequences. Amnesty's Horn of Africa campaigner, Suad Noor, says it would only serve what she calls Ethiopia's deeply embedded culture of impunity.
It will also deny justice for victims and survivors of gross human rights violations. This is including sexual violence from a highly atrocious conflict.
The UN Commission was established a year after war broke out between Ethiopia's government and forces in the country's Tigray region in November 2020. Rights groups say both sides are guilty of atrocities, including torture, mass executions, detentions, and rapes. Ethiopia's government has from the beginning opposed the commission's investigation and tried a year ago to block funding for it, calling it politically motivated, but failed to get enough votes. But diplomats this week told Reuters that Ethiopia is seeking support for a motion it plans to introduce at the UN Human Rights Council to end the commission's mandate 6 months early. Ethiopia's government has not commented directly on the Reuters report. But in prepared remarks at the opening of the African Union summit on February 15, Ethiopia's Deputy Prime Minister, Demeke Mekonnen, confirmed the plan.
This commission could undermine the EU-led peace process and the implementation of the peace agreement with inflammatory rhetoric. It could also undermine the effort of national institutions.
The printed speech given to some media went on to say that Ethiopia prepared a resolution for terminating the commission's mandate that will be presented at the council's upcoming session. It then called on the African Union to endorse our resolution and assist us to terminate this unwarranted mandate. But Demeke did not read that part of the written speech during his remarks. Reuters quoted Western diplomats saying they were urging Ethiopia to back off its plan to submit the motion, saying it would set a terrible precedent. At an AU summit press briefing, VOA asked UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres to comment on the Deputy Prime Minister's attack on the UN Commission.
The only thing I can testify is that the human rights work of the UN system is a work that is always positive in relation to peace processes.
The African Union brokered a November peace deal between Tigrayan forces and the Ethiopian government after fighting that killed tens of thousands, with some estimates in the hundreds of thousands. Suad Noor of Amnesty International says for peace to be sustainable, there must be justice and accountability. The Ethiopian government rejected the UN Commission's September report, which found widespread violations by both sides, including the government's using starvation as a method of warfare. Maya Misakir for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
In a historic vote, more than 100 United Nations members have agreed on a unified treaty to protect the high seas. Associated Press correspondent Sarah Nafar reports.
The treaty is a turning point in a years-long effort to bestow order on vast stretches of the planet where conservation was hampered by a confusing patchwork of laws. The agreement will create a new body to manage ocean life conservation and establish marine protected areas in ocean regions outside national boundary waters. Initially, the negotiations were anticipated to end on Friday, but stretched deep into Saturday, concluding a total of 2 weeks of talks in New York. Raina Lee, UN Ambassador for Oceans and Law of the Seas Issues, expressed her gratitude at the accomplishment, saying,
"Good evening-ish, ladies and gentlemen. The ship has reached the shore."
Experts say that a global oceans treaty is needed to enforce the UN's pledge to protect 30% of the planet's oceans, as well as its land, for conservation. I'm Sarah Nafa.
This is Science in a Minute.
Back on September 26, 2022, NASA's Double Asteroid Redirection Test, or DART, successfully carried out the first test of planetary defense when the spacecraft was intentionally rammed into Dimorphos, the moon of an asteroid named Didymos. The accomplished goal of the DART mission was to change the trajectory of an asteroid by shifting its orbit. According to NASA, scientists using a deflecting technique known as a kinetic impactor have effectively altered the orbit of Dimorphos by 33 minutes. While the Webb Space Telescope and ground-based telescopes kept an eye on DART's crash and what followed, the Hubble Space Telescope kept its cameras trained on the asteroid system for days following the impact. The resulting images provide an hour-by-hour time-lapse movie of the aftermath of DART's impact. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out voafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition on our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinua Adofo in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken recently met with Chinese Communist Party Central Foreign Affairs Office Director Wang Yi on the sidelines of the Munich Security Conference. It was the first high-level in-person meeting between U.S. and PRC diplomats since the United States discovered and downed a PRC high-altitude surveillance balloon in U.S. territorial airspace. In an interview on NBC after the February 18th meeting, Secretary Blinken said he took the opportunity with Director Wang to speak very clearly about the fact that China sent a surveillance balloon over our territory, violating our sovereignty, violating international law, and I told him quite simply that that was unacceptable and can never happen again. Secretary Blinken noted that as the PRC surveillance balloon traversed the United States, it attempted to surveil very sensitive military sites. In some cases, he said, it loitered or returned to them as it progressed east. So there's no doubt in our minds at all that, A, this was a surveillance balloon, and B, it was attempting to engage in active surveillance. Secretary Blinken pointed out that more than 40 countries have had their airspace violated by the PRC's balloon program, and that the recent incident over the United States has exposed the program to the world. Another issue Secretary Blinken raised with Mr. Wang involved the focus of this year's Munich Security Conference, Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Secretary Blinken voiced concerns that the PRC is considering lethal support to Russia in its ongoing aggression. China is trying to have it both ways, Secretary Blinken said. Publicly, they present themselves as a country striving for peace in Ukraine. But privately, we've seen already over these past months the provision of non-lethal assistance that goes directly to aiding and abetting Russia's war effort. Now, he said, there are indications they are strongly considering providing lethal assistance to Russia to include weapons. Secretary Blinken emphasized that we have not seen them cross that line. I made clear the importance of not crossing that line and the fact that it would have serious consequences in our bilateral relationship. Finally, Secretary Blinken underscored to Director Wang the importance of maintaining direct and open lines of communication and continuing to engage in diplomacy. This is something that the world expects of us, declared Secretary Blinken. They expect us to manage this relationship responsibly.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.